Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to talk about shapeshifting.
Which always sounds like science fiction right out of the gate.
Right, I know. And I don't mean the CGI kind you see in movies like, werewolves or Terminators or Mystique from X-Men, though that stuff is obviously cool.
Oh, definitely cool.
But I'm talking about something real, something that is likely happening right now in the building you are sitting in or the car you drove today. We're doing a deep dive into the mathematical precision of how crystals change their internal structure without falling apart.
It is a bit like magic, isn't it? But it's magic governed by incredibly strict geometry.
Yeah.
We're looking at a topic that sounds a little intimidating, homogeneous deformations. But really, it's just the blueprint for how materials transform from one phase to another.
It's the difference between a piece of metal that bends and one that just snaps.
Exactly.
Right, so homogeneous deformation. When I first saw that term in the stack of sources you sent over, I'll admit my eyes glazed over a bit. It sounds like a chapter in a textbook you just skip. But as I started digging into the material, I realized this is actually a really elegant concept. So let's unpack this. What exactly separates a homogeneous deformation from just, I don't know, just smashing something with a hammer?
It's a great question because in everyday language, deformation usually implies damage. You crash your car, the bumper deforms. That's bad.
Yeah, very bad.
But in crystallography, deformation is just change. The definition of homogeneous is actually very clean. A homogeneous deformation is a change in shape where points that were initially in a straight line remain in a straight line after the deformation.
Okay, let me try to visualize that for a second. If I take a piece of rubber and draw a grid on it with a Sharpie, and then I stretch it evenly in all directions,
Right.
the lines get longer. The boxes might stretch into rectangles, but the lines themselves don't get squiggly. They stay straight.
Precisely. And consequently, planes remain planes. Parallel lines remain parallel. Physically, this means that every single tiny volume element inside that material.
Like every little cube of atoms.
Yes, every little cube is experiencing the exact same change in shape. It's totally uniform.
And the sources contrast this with heterogeneous deformation to help us visualize it. They use the example of a deck of cards slipping or cracks forming.
Right, think about a crack in a windshield. That is a discontinuity. Two points that were right next to each other are suddenly ripped apart. Or think about the motion of rigid continental plates on the Earth.
Oh, sure.
You have one plate grinding against another. That is messy. That is heterogeneous. But when we talk about a phase transformation like steel hardening, specifically austenite turning into martensite, we model it as this uniform, smooth, homogeneous movement.
So it's kind of like a synchronized swim team versus a mosh pit.
That is a surprisingly accurate analogy. In a homogeneous deformation, the atoms are moving in a coordinated way. And because it's coordinated, we can use math to predict exactly where they end up.
Specifically, linear algebra.
Yes, linear algebra is the key here.
So our mission today is to decode this geometry. We're going to look at the Bane strain, which sounds like a villain in a Batman movie, but is actually the hero of modern engineering.
It really is.
And we're going to talk about invariant lines and planes. Basically, how do crystals glue themselves together when they change shape?
It really is fascinating. It's the fundamental geometry that dictates why high-performance alloys work the way they do.
So let's get into the anatomy of this change. The source material breaks down any observable change in shape into two specific ingredients. It says you can factorize deformation. What are the two parts?
Mathematically, we can factorize any deformation gradient into two components. First, rigid body rotation, and second, pure strain.
Okay, let's take them one by one. Rigid body rotation. That one seems intuitive. It spins, but it doesn't change shape, like spinning a basketball on your finger.
Exactly. The relative positions of the atoms don't change at all. The distance between atom A and atom B is exactly the same before and after the spin. The object just reorients itself in space. That's the easy part.
Right. But the second ingredient, pure strain, is where the actual shape shifting happens.
Yes. Pure strain involves stretching or compressing along three specific directions. We call these orthogonal axes. Imagine a cube. You can pull the top and bottom, push the side faces, and maybe pull the front and back faces.
Orthogonal meaning at right angles to each other, like the corners of a room.
Yes, and crystallographers use a 3x3 matrix to describe these
It's a
changes.
trick. I knew we'd get there eventually, but the text makes a really important distinction here that I think is easy to miss, and I want to make sure we nail it for the listener. It distinguishes between a coordinate transformation and a deformation matrix.
Oh, this is a vital distinction, and it trips up a lot of students. A coordinate transformation is just changing your reference frame. Mm. It's like moving the camera to get a different angle on the same scene.
Okay.
If I look at a statue from the front, then walk around and look at it from the side, my mathematical description of the statue changes, but the statue itself hasn't been touched.
Okay, so one is moving the camera.
Right. A deformation matrix, on the other hand, represents physically changing the object relative to a fixed frame. You aren't moving the camera, you're reaching out and squashing the statue. You are physically displacing the material points to new locations.
So one is a change of perspective, the other is a change of reality.
A dramatic way to put it, but yes, in this deep dive, we are interested in the squashing. We care about the physical change of the crystal lattice. And this brings us to the concept of principal axes. Remember, we mentioned pure strain involves stretching along three directions.
Right, the X, Y, and Z axes of the squash.
The principal axes are the three specific directions that during a pure stretch remain at 90 degrees to each other. They don't rotate relative to one another, they just get longer or shorter.
So going back to, say, a Jell-O cube, if I squish it perfectly from the top, the sides bulge out. The vertical axis gets shorter, the horizontal axis get longer, but the corners of the Jell-O cube stay at 90 degrees. It doesn't skew or tilt.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those axes, the direction of the squash and the direction of the bulge, are the principal axes. And the amount they stretch or shrink are the principal deformations or eigenvalues.
Okay, let's apply this to something real. The sources spend a lot of time on the Bain strain. This is the specific mechanism for how steel hardens right, transforming austenite into martensite.
That's the one. It is the classic example in metallurgy. We are starting with austenite, which has a face-centered cubic structure, or FCC.
Okay.
Think of a cube with atoms on the corners and atoms in the middle of each face. It's very dense. And we want to turn it into martensite, which is body-centered cubic, or BCC.
So a cube with just one atom in the very center.
Yes.
So we have a cube with atoms on the faces, and we want to turn it into a cube with an atom in the center. How does the Bain strain propose we do that?
Well, if you look at the FCC lattice closely, you can actually draw a smaller BCC cell inside of it by connecting different atoms. But the dimensions are wrong. It's like a BCC cell that's been stretched out. To make it a proper martensite crystal, you have to squash it.
Squash it how much?
Significant amounts. The Bain strain suggests you compress it along one axis, let's call it the Z axis, by about 20%. And then you have to expand it uniformly along the other two axes, X and Y, by about 12%.
Whoa, wait, 20% compression?
That is massive. If I compressed a building by 20%, it would be a pile of rubble.
It is huge. Most materials would just fracture. But metals at these temperatures and scales can accommodate it, barely.
The text uses a visual of a sphere to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a sphere of austenite atoms and I apply this Bain strain,
that sphere gets squashed into what we call an ellipsoid of revolution. Think of it like a hamburger bun.
A hamburger bun.
Or maybe a slightly flattened M&M. It's symmetric, it's round, but it is definitely shorter and wider than the sphere it started as.
Okay, so we've squashed our sphere into a hamburger bun, we've changed the shape. The atoms are now in the BCC arrangement, job done right. We have martensite.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. If you just stop there, you'd have a problem. A big problem.
The Bain strain creates the right structure for martensite internally, but it doesn't account for how this new crystal fits against the old one. Remember, this transformation happens inside the solid metal. You have a pocket of austenite turning into martensite.
Oh, I see. So the hamburger bun is wider than the sphere was. It doesn't fit in the hole anymore.
Exactly. The mismatch is huge. If you just let the Bain strain happen, the interface between the new martensite and the old austenite would be incredibly high energy. It would be distorted, stressed, and likely to crack.
And nature hates high energy.
Nature wants a seamless fit.
So the crystal has to figure out a way to connect the two phases without tearing itself apart. It needs a glue.
Exactly. And this leads us into the mathematics of eigenvalues and eigenvectors.
I feel like we just walked into a college linear algebra class, but stick with us, listener. This is actually where the physical magic happens. Why do we care about eigenvalues here?
Because we are looking for directions that don't change. When we deform that sphere into an ellipsoid, almost every line inside that material rotates or changes length. An eigenvector is a direction that remains unrotated by the deformation.
So it points the exact same way before and after.
Correct. And the eigenvalue is simply the ratio of the final length to the initial length along that vector.
So if the eigenvalue is 2, that direction got twice as long. If it's 0.5, it got squashed to half size.
Precisely. Now, the source mentions something quite funny about the math here. If you solve the equation for these eigenvalues purely mathematically, you could theoretically get a negative number.
What does a negative eigenvalue even mean?
Physically, it implies the material turned inside out, like pulling a sock through itself.
Which I'm assuming steel doesn't do.
No, it does not. A negative eigenvalue is physically impossible in this context. But checking for real positive eigenvalues helps us understand the nature of the strain. It allows us to simplify complex deformations into what we call a diagonal representation.
Which basically means finding the angle where the math becomes simple stretching, right?
Yes. If you find the principal axes, the eigenvectors, you can ignore the rotation for a moment and just look at the pure stretch.
Okay, let's go back to our hamburger bun, the Bain strain. We have this flattened sphere that doesn't fit in the hole. How do we fix the fit?
We look for the invariant line.
The invariant line. That sounds like a mythical concept.
It is the key to the whole transformation.
Mm.
Let's go back to the sphere getting squashed into the ellipsoid.
Mm.
The vertical axis got shorter. It compressed. The horizontal axis got longer. They expanded.
Right. Short z, long x and y.
By the laws of continuity, if some lines got shorter and some got longer, there must be a set of lines somewhere in between that are exactly the same length as they started.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Like, if I walk from the bottom of a valley to the top of a hill, at some point I have to cross sea level.
Exactly. Even though the shape changed, there are lines connecting the center to the surface that didn't change their length. In the Bain strain, because of the symmetry, these lines form a cone of unextended lines.
Okay, so we have a cone of lines inside the bun that are the right length, but they're pointing in the wrong direction because of the squash, right? They've been tilted.
Correct. They're distorted in terms of orientation.
Yeah.
So how do we solve this? We use the second ingredient of deformation we talked about at the start, rigid body rotation.
We spin the hamburger bun.
We rotate the new ellipsoid just right. If we tilt it, we can bring one of those lines on the cone back to its original position in space.
So now that line is the original length and the original direction.
Precisely. It is unextended and unrotated. It is an invariant line.
Uh-huh. So the Bain strain gives us the shape, but the rigid body rotation puts it in the right place.
Yes. And that combination strain plus rotation explains why when we look under a microscope, the martensite needles in steel are always tilted at weird angles. They aren't just sitting square. They are rotated to find that fit.
That is wild. So the microstructure of steel, the thing that engineers look at every single day, is basically a frozen record of the metal trying to solve a geometry problem.
That is exactly it. That orientation relationship isn't random, it is calculated. The material must rotate to preserve that invariant line to minimize the strain energy at the interface.
Because if it didn't...
If it didn't, the energy barrier would be too high and the transformation might not happen at all.
But the source goes one step further. It talks about the holy grail of interfaces, not just a line, but a whole plane.
The invariant plane strain, yes. Ideally, you want the two crystals to touch along a perfectly coherent interface.
Mm.
Imagine gluing two blocks together where the faces match perfectly atom for atom. No distortion, no rotation, just a seamless match.
Like a perfect weld.
Better than a weld.
Yeah.
Atomic continuity. But to get a whole plane that is invariant, meaning every line in that plane is unchanged, the math is much stricter. You need the principal strains to interact in a very specific way.
What's the rule?
Well, think about it. To have a plane that doesn't change shape, you need one direction in that plane to stay the same and another direction in that plane to stay the same.
Makes sense.
The source explains that this is only possible if your principal strains are mixed. You need one axis to expand, one to shrink, and the third one must be
zero. Or unity, meaning it doesn't change length at all.
Exactly. If one axis grows, one shrinks, and the middle one stays the length of one completely unchanged, then that middle axis and the lines connecting it can form an invariant plane.
The source gives an example of this, FCC transforming to HCP, hexagonal close packed.
Yes, that transformation can happen by a simple shear on a specific plane. Because of the geometry, you get a fully coherent interface. The atoms just shuffle slightly and perfectly match up across the boundary. It's very elegant.
But for our friend Martensite, the Bain strain was shrink Z, expand X, expand Y.
Right.
We don't have a neutral axis. We have one shrink and two expand, so Martensite can't form an invariant plane.
Not directly. And this is why Martensite is so messy and full of defects. Since it can't find a perfect invariant plane, it creates a habit plane that is macroscopically invariant. But if you zoom in, it creates a bunch of slips or twins, little faults in the crystal to compensate for the mismatch.
Oh, Oh, so it cheats.
It cheats. It creates internal damage to make the outer interface fit. And interestingly, all that internal damage, those dislocations and twins, is what makes Martin's sight so incredibly hard.
That is almost poetic. The frustration of the crystal trying to fit is what gives the steel its strength.
It really is. The properties come from the struggle to accommodate the geometry.
So what does this all mean for us? We've gone from squashing spheres to rotating ellipsoids.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it changes how we see materials. We tend to think of solids as static, but really they are incredibly dynamic. The reason a knife holds an edge or a bridge holds weight is because of these invariant lines and planes locking the structure together deep inside.
There is one final provocative thought in the source material that I found really trippy to think about. It mentions that this factorization saying, first it stretches, then it rotates, is just a mathematical convenience.
Yes. This is a crucial philosophical point in physics. We say, take the Bain strain, then apply a rotation. Or we could say, rotate it, then apply the strain. The math works out exactly the same for the final state.
But the text says this doesn't tell us the actual path the atoms took.
Exactly. We know the before austenite and the after martensite perfectly. We could describe the geometry of the transformation with absolute precision. But the during, the actual trajectory of an individual atom as it shuffles from one spot to another, the phenomenological theory doesn't prescribe that path.
So it's path independent.
The energy calculation is. It just tells us the conditions that must be met for the final state to exist. It's like knowing someone drove from New York to LA and knowing exactly how much gas they used, but not knowing if they took Route 66 or I-80.
So we have a perfect map of the destination, but the journey is still a bit of a mystery.
In a way, yes. We model the path to make the math solvable, and nature usually takes the most efficient path, but we can't mathematically pinpoint the exact moment of the shift.
I love that. It's like we can predict exactly where the shapeshifter ends up, but we can't quite see the moment of the shift.
That's a fitting conclusion.
So for you listening, the next time you look at a piece of metal, maybe a fork or a building beam, don't just see a gray slab. Imagine those billions of tiny ellipsoids locked inside, rotated just so perfectly, aligning their invariant cones to hold the whole thing together.
It adds a whole new layer of beauty to the material world.
That certainly does. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Always a pleasure.
We'll catch you on the next one.